Ken Hartman and Kevin Keith on Party Line. WILO.
This is Party Line on WILO 1570 AM and 96.9 FM. At your side since 1960. This is your forum for public opinion and comment. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of WILO management, employees, or sponsors. If you're listening live at 8:30, you're invited to give us a call locally at 765-659-3338 or toll-free at 1-800-447-4463. If you're listening to this program on our afternoon encore broadcast, don't call, just enjoy the show. Now let's join Party Line on 1570 AM and 96.9 FM, WILO.
Welcome to Party Line on this TGIF. Want to thank our sponsors, Welty Custom Exteriors, Susan Casper State Farm Insurance, Encompass Credit Union, Milner Healthcare, Ivy Tech Community College, Simple Time Antiques, and ClintonCountyDailyNews.com. Plus our telecast online at HoosierlandTV.com, made possible by the Farmers Bank, Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, Schultz IGA, Home National Bank, Wilson Farm Market, ProBite Computer Sales and Service, Ardente Dental, and Slabby's Food and Freedom. I'm Kevin Keith, joined in the studio with WILO News Director Ken Hartman. We've also got Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summer. Good morning, folks.
Good morning. Good morning.
First, let's start with the Skywatch weather forecast. It is the first official day of spring and breezy conditions today. If you've been outside, you've noticed that. Mostly cloudy. 50-50 chance of rain till midday. A high at 60 degrees this afternoon. Much colder tonight, partly cloudy. How about a low down to 24? And then colder tomorrow, we'll see a high 40. I'm laughing too, guys. That's crazy. Sunday, we'll see partly cloudy skies and a high at 42.
And back in the 60s next week.
Yeah, it'll feel like spring then. Did you check the temperature?
No, I didn't.
Okay, we won't even say what it is. We don't have our temperature.
Because the high is what it is now, so it's going to just go all down.
And then it'll be dropping throughout the day.
Possibly by noon, about in the 40s.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay, so we have a ton to talk about this morning. Ken, you printed off some things for me. If there's something you think I missed that we need to know, feel free to jump right in there.
All right.
Of course, we did hear a couple days ago that Mayor Judy Sheets has announced that all City of Frankfort public meetings will be canceled through April 4th. That could extend out, but that's what we're going with for now. So those public meetings include Board of Works, City Council, the March 23rd Redevelopment Commission, and all city court dates at Old Stoney through April 7th. So they're going to take another look at that on April 1st and see what we need to do. And it will not be an April Fool's Day thing. It will be legit. We'll bring that to you. Also, starting today, Goodwin and Archer Weston Funeral Homes, along with Ginda, are basically going to private services only, Ken, right? Is that like 10 or less?
Yes, 10 or less.
For the immediate family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, there has been some discussion that they're going to try to video stream some of this. We may have a hand in that as well. And as soon as we find details of that, where you can literally go online from anywhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to fly in for a family member's funeral or something. You can watch that and try to grieve in your own way on that. Again, things change hour to hour sometimes. The United Way making some changes to the community dinner. So this is in conjunction with the Boys and Girls Clubs in our township, the fire departments, Rotary, and YMCA. They are passing out food on Monday, March 23rd only. That's between 5 and 6:30 p.m. That's next Monday at the YMCA at the Eastside Park, and then Center Township Office and the Boys and Girls Club. Originally, Ken, they were going to do that over like a four-day period.
Yeah, almost like a two-week period.
Yeah.
But they're having trouble getting donations and getting food, and so they've had to cut this back to what they're going to cut it back to.
You can still give some money to that donation because we don't know how long that'll take.
Also, there's a list on there that's on CCDN as far as what they're looking for as far as canned foods. And the deadline is today at the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay. So if you want to contribute to that, go purchase that and take it over there to the Boys and Girls Club. And, of course, they're looking for a lot of the non-perishable staples, crackers and chili in cans and granola bars and spaghetti and sauce and boxed mashed potatoes, butter, ravioli, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we had kind of a confusing headline yesterday as we got an announcement from... Governor Holcomb. But after you boil it all down, it basically means there's school canceled till May 1st.
Yeah.
So that's...
Even though he didn't flat out say that in the little release we got yesterday.
Yeah, it was a bit confusing. I don't know if he's trying to cushion the blow or what. There's now 56 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the Hoosier State. Also, I saw something that was disturbing. Did you see the health department official in Lebanon that's received death threats?
Yes.
Over this
morning.
Over their current protocols, Brett Pepin is an environmental health director for Boone County and says one threat was vulgar and vicious and even mentioned his wife and child. The second threat involved the county's closing of a public building and the person not having access to public Wi-Fi. Both threats under investigation. You got to keep your scruples about yourself here. You know, we are all in this together, and everybody's a little on edge, you know. But, I mean, wow, that's not one way to go about it.
No.
All right, so we certainly welcome your phone calls this morning at 659-3338 or 1-800-447-4463. We do have Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summer in here for a half hour. What else did we find out yesterday, Ken, that we need to know? We've got the Frankfort Police Department
right. Going
to close the front lobby until at least April 4th.
And starting here in a few minutes, utility billing office, their lobby will be closed, and you have to make all payments and startups and all that through the, you know,
the night drop.
The night drop column. And then also the drive of windows are 9 to 5.
We paid our electric bill over the phone.
I've got a new one to pay. I haven't got there yet.
You gonna do the drive up or the?
I ain't gonna have a choice.
Yeah. Well, they charge you like $375 to pay it over the phone, which we were willing to do this time.
Well, I'll promise I want to get a receipt for mine, so I've got to go through the drive up to get a receipt.
I hear you. We had mentioned the other day the Frankfort Municipal Utilities has enacted that suspension of service on disconnects due to non-payments. But try, you know, that's the thing. Try to pay your bills if you can right now, because whenever this gets back to some sense of normalcy, you don't want to be behind on 2 or 3 months worth of bills. Sometimes that makes all the difference in the world.
Yep. True.
We're also working on something here on Party Line, hopefully starting next week with the Chamber of Commerce, to just kind of put the word out there as to who is open and who's serving and, you know, doing deliveries and things like that.
Yeah.
So, again, we welcome your phone calls at 659-3338 or 800-447-4463. So, Tony, what's the latest we need to know concerning the courthouse or trial dates and things like that?
Certainly. There have been action taken in with regard to courthouse access and also specifically on trials. The authorities that govern such matters are different for the courtrooms themselves. It would be the circuit and superior court judges, and they have issued orders that have restricted hearings to be done in the courtroom to only essential hearings. Only attorneys and parties are allowed access to the courtrooms for those hearings. Jury trials presently are being postponed and continued out past April, and will be revisited at that time, whether or not. And that's because the judges do not want to subject people to being called in for jury service, where they would have to be in a group of larger, you know, more than 10 people together. And so no jury trials through the month of April here in Clinton County. And with regard to access to the courthouse, our commissioners continue to enunciate policies to try and keep people, the community, and employees in the courthouse safe. So they restricted access to the west doors of the courthouse. Persons visiting the courthouse are supposed to either wash their hands or use hand sanitizer that's being made available to them coming into the courthouse. And so it's an idea that's being spread that social distancing rules, basically, that if you do have to have business transacted in the courthouse, that you try and maintain separation between yourself and others, including the people that are working there in the courthouse, that you stay behind the counters. Some of the offices have put up signs posting policies and of that nature.
You know, and for you guys, I would, another thing for the trial thing is that you guys have a limited amount of jurist pool to really choose from, which I think would affect you guys maybe a little bit more than some other places.
Well, the courts are the ones who conduct the practice of calling the jury panels And they use a random system. But even for a misdemeanor or a low-level felony case, as many as 24 people would have to be called in for the selection process. And the jury room, the jury box in the courtroom is not set up such that people could maintain a six-foot spacing.
Right.
The facilities are smaller than that in the courthouse itself, and that was part of what led the judges to adopt the policy of saying we're not going to call jury panels right now.
Are you happy with what they've done so far, and is there something out there that you think they should do that they haven't done as of yet?
There aren't additional steps that I think they should take with regard to the policies that they've adopted. The policies they've adopted are in compliance with the guidance that is coming from the federal and state level on social distancing policies. The court's policy, the judges submitted their policy to the Supreme Court for approval, and it is in keeping with the Supreme Court. Chief Justice Rush also issued an order regarding non-essential hearings and social distancing, and it's in compliance with that order as well. So all of that is consistent. I think that additional steps may be taken, could be taken, such as we've seen in other counties where they will limit access to the courthouse to only emergency cases as opposed to just essential cases. And sometimes, you know, we're using words that can have different meanings, and they're being decided almost case by case at this point.
Have you guys made any changes with your prison, with your people who are already in jail, the prisoners that come over for trial? Has that anything been done with that as of yet?
There are steps being taken at the jail with regard to screening intake at the jail. I'm aware of those. Haven't been involved in any of the policies adopted by the jail in that regard. And then information is being shared from the correction staff to the court staff. And the court has been granting continuances and moving cases out case by case as needed for those parties that need time. Someone who's not feeling well and they want a continuance, their case is continued by the judge.
Is there a limit on how long you can continue cases, or is that just kind of an infinite amount of time?
Because of the extraordinary circumstances that we're in, the Administrative Rule 17 of the Supreme Court trial rules and the policies that have been adopted, it actually tolls time periods that might otherwise be in place for the resolution of cases.
Okay. All right.
What about, I know it's uncharted territory, but, you know, I kind of look a couple months out, the backlog of cases and stuff, and trying to catch up, you know, and get back on track for, again, uncharted territory. I don't know.
It is. And
you only have so many hours in a day, right?
There are only so many hours in a day, and the backlog of cases is something that I've always been sensitive to. With the heavy filing years that we've had over the last 2 years, the number of cases that are pending has increased because of just a high volume of filings. We were in a situation when I first took office where there was a huge backlog of cases. We resolved that backlog of cases and got things down to what I think is a more reasonable time frame for resolution of cases. I don't want to be in a position where I'm resolving criminal cases that are more than 6 months old. I like to try to get them resolved within 6 months of their filing.
Mm-hmm.
Under the trial rules, I have up to a year of time that I can use.
Okay.
When I first came in, I was trying cases to juries that were 5 years old.
Wow.
Now, here lately, I've had to try some cases that are approaching almost 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's too old,
mm-hmm.
in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
But I alone don't control how long it takes to resolve a case, and there's always case-by-case circumstances that come up that cause
right.
cases to be continued out that are beyond my control. But right now, yes, there's a volume of cases, and continuances right now only contribute to that volume,
mm-hmm.
and we will, at some point, as things return to normal, have to get through that backlog.
Will there be? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, will there be like an order of how you which cases you're gonna put above others, possibly if you start getting a backlog or not?
That process actually happens as the cases are set for trial. There are always multiple cases set for trial on any date that's being used by the court for trial settings. I commonly have as many as two dozen set on a given trial date. And then within that group of cases that are set that day, as we're trying to resolve them, we're either getting them resolved by agreement, We're agreeing that there needs to be a continuance for some reason, or the case is going on to trial. As we're working through that order, we take into account the severity of the case, the very nature of the case. If it's just a crime against the laws of the state, or if it's a crime where there are victims that are involved in the case, the age of the case, whether or not the person who is set for trial is still in custody, are all factors that are taken into account with regard to the priority that we give to the cases that are going to trial.
Okay. So also, if there's, you can still give us a call here. We've got about 14 minutes or so left with Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Sommer. Tony, I know you may not know the answer to this, but I just wanted to ask it. We've had a couple people call over the last couple of days. Have you heard anything on who or how they're going to prioritize testing for coronavirus and from a county to county basis? I know if you have some symptoms and maybe if you know somebody, you can get something a little more quickly than.
I don't know about that necessarily. I know that most of the decisions on testing are being made based on CDC guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And that the CDC guidelines, as I understand them right now, make it much more difficult for younger people to be able to get a test done to see if they have COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, to me that doesn't make sense, and I think that from some of the social media conversations that are taking place out there, other people wonder at that as well. I think that the idea initially with the data that came out of China is that younger people are less at risk for serious illness or death from COVID-19. I think that that's largely being borne out by the data, but I think that the experience worldwide may be a little different than the results in China. Some of the data that I've been seeing most recently from CBS News, they're quoting some results that indicate that nearly 25% of the people hospitalized for COVID-19 thus far outside of China are in age range that is from 19 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some data that indicates that, 40% of the people hospitalized for COVID-19 are under the age of 40. And so here just recently I popped up on my Facebook feed a person that was 34 years old who just died from COVID-19.
Saw that too, yeah.
Yeah, and so under the circumstances, I think that the idea that younger age groups are not affected is something that you need to re-examine carefully in your own personal thinking about your conduct and social distancing and those kinds of things. I can't affect the CDC policy. So
right
now, the gatekeepers are healthcare professionals, medical service providers, and the health department. My understanding is all of the tests that are done have to be submitted to the state through the health department. And so right now, that's kind of the conduit for the testing that's submitted. There are the beginnings of private services that are being offered for COVID-19 mm-hmm. testing. And so certainly that should increase the volume of testing for people who just want to have certainty.
Right, right.
From my point of view, not having the ability to have a person tested is deeply troubling. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a position where, say an example, an employer, whether it be a public or a private sector employer, where you have a situation where an employee is ill in the workplace and wants to submit to testing and can't get a test done. They're in a position where they're going to use personal leave time mm-hmm. to be out of the workplace such that they can maintain a paycheck coming in during these times. I hate to see that happening. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see someone who is in a position where they don't have enough leave time to be able to separate themselves from the workplace just for a sense of well-being for everybody else who's there, let alone their own personal well-being in terms of what they need to do. And so I understand the question, and I don't have the guidelines. The medical professionals always seem to be reading from a document that's issued by the CDC.
They've got it right there in front of them, right?
Who can and can't. I'm hearing a lot more people rejected for testing than accepted for testing.
Me too, yeah.
And so what I would say, just trying to think logically about this, the more testing that can be done, the better off we will be, because it will give us more certainty on who needs to be separated from everybody else.
Absolutely.
And so in the meantime, all the rest of us have to act and behave as if we personally are infected with it.
Right, right.
That's the way we should think about it, and that we should practice social distancing, at least 6 feet between, hand washing, hand sanitizer, trying to avoid the personal contact, keeping hard surfaces clean, trying to limit the exchange even of, we were talking about getting a receipt from something earlier from banking purposes.
Right, yeah.
My understanding is in the temperature range between 60 and 70 degrees, COVID-19 coronavirus can live for up to 2 hours on a piece of paper.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so so
thanks for giving me that one.
So spray your receipt with Lysol, Ken.
We just have to be careful about such things. Hard surfaces apparently can live much longer.
And in the air, it lives a pretty good time.
Well,
too,
yeah, as far as the ambient air transmission is the way most people have to be concerned, and that's the reason for the 6 feet spacing minimum.
Mm. One thing I was curious about is that, do you have an issue with people being publicly named who have the coronavirus?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, because that's not right.
Do you think that could be a possibility of not being able to be employed ever again?
I don't know about not being able to be employed ever again, but under the circumstances, it exposes that person to having their private health information shared publicly.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's appropriate. I think that they should have privacy in that information. And I don't want to expose them to any unnecessary harm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that although we want to be acting as if we all have it, identifying one particular person as a person having it doesn't help us, I don't think, because there's so many other people out there that may have it as well who aren't being identified.
I noticed, like yesterday, the New Orleans Saints head coach, and there's a couple of players with the Lakers and one with Detroit and several other NBA have been identified. That's why I wanted to bring that up.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I understand, and I just think it's inappropriate to talk about names of people. I think that to the extent that the media has been covering the cases that are positive cases and trying to give demographic information on specific cases, it helps to inform the public as to the nature of who is getting and who has and who is suffering seriously when they get this virus. But I think that we need to step back and think of it as something that can have detrimental effects on anyone who gets it. I what I'm reading is that it takes 2 weeks to get over if you get it, and the people that become seriously ill with it can take 6 weeks or longer. So it's a very serious virus if you get the virus. I don't think we should overreact to it either. It's the kind of thing that for the vast majority of people, they do recover in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that somehow now that person should never be employed again, how would that be different than the getting the H1N1 flu that people passed around a couple of years
that's
ago?
That's why I brought that up, because I know that people are scared to hire people who have HIV and those type of things. That's why I brought that up.
I understand.
Yeah, okay. People got to have some privacy. That's for darn sure. Yeah, this is America.
Supposedly.
I read an article over the weekend, and it was simply titled, Why a Quarantine Works.
Mm-hmm,
And it spelled out the why quarantine works. And then I saw something yesterday that they've been doing that in Seattle for quite, a couple of weeks now. And maybe a light at the end of the tunnel is that they're seeing those cases stay there or go down.
Correct.
Because they have quarantined these areas. So,
well, it's been discussed so many times, we're beating a dead horse, but the whole idea is to slow the transmission of this virus so that it doesn't overwhelm our healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if by taking these steps we think that we're going to be able to stop this virus from spreading. We just think we can slow the spread of the virus. So it's going to happen.
Flattening the curve, yes.
Yeah, the flattening the curve idea. And it has to do with that the resources that are needed for the very serious cases, where they have to go into intensive care, where they need ventilators, that there are not enough of those facilities to go around if we just allow this virus to transmit as it would without us doing anything. That would have a tremendous spike of people with serious illnesses that would overwhelm our healthcare system. And we're trying to prevent that from happening.
Also saw this morning on the CBS Morning News they had, and again, I don't want to give out any false hope or anything, but there was a drug that they had, I forget what the name of it was. It was a long name. I can pronounce it, though, but I forget what it was, that might slow this, you know, or help with some of that. So maybe that's another silver lining out there. Also, I want to get to Russ Casper, who's here on the phone, but I do have one more thing that ties in with legalities. We'll talk about that in a moment. Good morning, Russ.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm well.
Good, good. Tony, good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you.
Yeah, good. I was looking at that hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, that was it.
Sulfate. And the stock of that company went up tremendously yesterday. I noticed that. Didn't have any money in it. I think it's a Standard & Poor's company, but I did a little work study on that. It looked reasonably hopeful. Obviously, it takes a long time to do these trials for certainty, but they had pretty good luck with it over in Italy.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that article that piece on TV this morning. Also, Russ. Yeah,
it doesn't have a. It has some side effects, but. You know, it caused you to lose a little hair. That wouldn't be any problem for Ken.
No, or me, no. That's all right.
Be careful, Rush. You're getting there.
Plus, they said it's an old drug to treat malaria.
Right. Anti-malarial.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. And that is certainly a ray of sunshine, I thought. Of course, the proof is in the pudding, but
sure.
I thought that was interesting. Okay, well, I don't know what... what else to talk about? The Tony, this is affecting you, I'm sure, with the courts being closed and everything, right?
Well, it certainly is, in the sense of it is slowing down hearings in the courtroom. And so at this time, it definitely has an impact on us being able to carry out business. But because of people complying with requests to stay home more, not be out as much. We're also seeing a great decline in the number of new arrests that are being made. So that's all good news. I've often said in the past, if I didn't have anything to do, I'd be perfectly okay with that.
We say that too here at the radio.
Okay. Well, I didn't have anything else. I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, bye.
So one more thing I saw also this morning on CBS News, that two Republican senators are being accused of selling off stocks ahead of the economic meltdown triggered by the pandemic. One report from ProPublica says North Carolina's Richard Burr, who is the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman, sold off stocks worth as much as $1.7 million in the weeks after being briefed about the magnitude of the threat. A report from the Daily Beast also says Senator Kelly Loeffler of Georgia also dumped about $3 million worth of stocks starting in late January, and her husband is chairman of the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, there you
so,
go.
Yeah, that's that doesn't pass the smell test. Yeah, even well, I can figure that one out.
Looks like insider trading type
problems.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tell me one thing I will ask you. If people are in doubt, I mean, should people call the courthouse to see if things are, if their trial's going to happen, or do you guys
do you
notify them, or what?
Yeah, they do receive notices. They sign up for the notices. They get them by email or text message. Regular mail notices are sent to them on their hearing dates. But if they are in doubt, if they have an attorney, they can contact their attorney in the case. If they do not have an attorney, they can telephone the courts and check on the status of any case they have set. Yes.
Okay. All right. Tony, we appreciate you coming in this morning. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Well, thank you. Everybody, follow those social distancing guidelines out there. Take care of yourself. Stay healthy. I want to thank my staff for coming in and doing what they have to do there in the courthouse on a daily basis. Appreciate the hard work that they're doing.
All right. We'll be back with more Party Line next. Ken Hartman had a chance to sit down with Mayor Judy Sheets. We'll have that interview coming up next on Wylo's Party Line.
This is Party Line.
Listen.